Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you don't want to go on the radio, that's fine. You can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. I started off the show this evening with my theme song for all of our straight wives, I Can See Clearly Now, because by the time you're listening to this radio show, hopefully you are seeing clearly now and seeing what's been wrong in your marriage and the steps that you need to take to fix a mistake that happened. And before we get on with my guest tonight, Dr. Brian Hooper, my favorite doctor who comes to make us well once a month. He's a wonderful man who always is there for us. I did want to make a couple of announcements. The first announcement is that I want to remind people that we're starting to gear up for our September retreat in Los Angeles, California. I'm really excited about being with my West Coast ladies, and we're going to have women coming there from all over, not just the West Coast, but from Canada, from Florida, from everywhere around the country, outside the country, including Hawaii. And it's going to be such a dynamic weekend. And the thing I love about the healing weekends is that women get to meet others who understand exactly how they feel without ever having to say a word. And that it's just so much of a continuation of everything that you've been feeling, to find women who can understand what you're feeling is just phenomenal. So when women leave these weekends, they feel so good. We do workshops along with having our, you know, day where we exchange with each other and have our discussion days. We also have people speaking on how they moved ahead. Depending on where you are in your recovery or your journey for recovery, some people are just at the beginning while others are in the middle or moving further ahead. We have people from every walk of life there at every different stage sharing their experiences and teaching you how you can get past the immediate pain that you're going through. I mean, you do have to go through it. There's no way to ignore it or avoid it, but at least you have women who can give you hope and show you how their lives have turned around also. So it's my gift to our women. I do this twice a year, and there's no charge for the event other than for a one-night dinner charge, and that's to help offset the cost of the hotel as far as the meeting room. But we have a group rate for the rooms, and it's going to be an amazing experience. I know I'm going in early to meet with some of our early comers and staying a day or two later just because it's going to be so exciting to be there. But the weekend is September 20th and 21st. And if you would like to join me, please write to me at bonkaye at AOL.com. Okay, so without further ado, I'm going to bring on my co-host, Dr. Brian Hooper. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Bonnie. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I told you you're going to have to carry a lot of the show because I'm bouncing back from a virus, and hopefully I won't be coughing in people's ears too much tonight. But you said you would do that for me.
and get some warm water and honey and lemon or not?
No, I didn't. Well, that's because I can't drink honey, Brian. These are all things that I can't, as a older diabetic woman, be doing anymore. Now I have to count on my antibiotics and hopefully my cough medicine. Yeah. But that was good advice. 20 years ago, I could have really done that good and
you
enjoyed
could have done
it.
Okay.
Yeah, so how have you been this month?
I've been busy. Just with life and with practices continuing to grow, and had a few folks from your show, men and women, reaching out to me recently, and I'm grateful that I can be of some help to them and resource them a little bit. So it's all good. Good, yeah.
Good. And one of the things that my dear friend Grace from Texas told me about tonight, I wanted to mention it to you. I don't know if you're familiar with this, because I really have not heard of this before. She was reading was in touch with some people about something called the vagus nerve. Have you heard of that?
Yes. Uh-huh. I can't, but don't ask me to give you a dissertation on it, but it's connected to the stomach, as I recollect.
I'll tell you, you really are a doctor. Can you practice medicine?
No, I can't practice medicine.
All right. Well, you know a lot more than I do anyway. I never heard of this till tonight. But my friend Grace was telling me that there's a study being done on the vagus nerve, and it's spelled V-A-G-U-S as opposed to going to Las Vegas. The vagus nerve, that's supposed to be tied into your intuition. And somehow, you know, she was trying to explain it to me, and she did a beautiful job, but my memory retention is really limited. So what she said, there's studies going on that there is something within you, you know, sensory nerve, which, you know, this is the vagus nerve, that when you're meeting someone and something's not right, it kind of gives you that kind of message.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's kind of like your intuition tied in with that.
Okay.
So that's what she was telling me about. But I told her that I think that people really, I haven't heard of this terminology before, but I really believe people do have a sense of intuition. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. And when we deny our intuition and don't try to get to the bottom of it, we end up usually getting hurt in some way. I've denied my intuition before, and and paid the price. So it's always listen to your intuition.
Brian, could you really discuss a little bit why people ignore it? Because, you know, I have Donna Anderson from Love Fraud coming on my show every few months, and she has a great newsletter. I don't know if you're on her list, but she'll be happy to add you, called lovefraud.com, you know, weekly newsletter. And it's really about people who are sociopaths and how to deal with if your mate has sociopathic behavior. And it deals a lot with narcissism and those issues as well. But she did a really interesting study in a survey where she asked 100 women who were married to men who have been classified as sociopaths whether or not prior to marriage that their intuition was telling them that there was a problem, or their red flags or warning symbols. Now, this doesn't have to do with straight gay. This is just in general. And
right.
She said that 73 of the 100 women knew that there was something wrong before they said, I do. But they did it anyway.
Exactly.
Yep. So can you talk a little bit why that happens?
Well, I think the first reason is that none of us want to be thought of as judgmental, as bigoted in some way. And so, you know, we may say, well, everything looks pretty good on the outside, so we may be denying legitimate communication we're getting at a meta level. But we don't have the lens through which to really appreciate that kind of communication, and because we've not been taught to recognize it. But nevertheless, the message is getting through, but we don't want to appear judgmental, so we will deny our intuition. A second reason would be that we're really in love with somebody, and we want it to work, and we're tired of thinking about finding anybody else, and so we engage in that kind of denial. A third reason can be that particularly when it gets close to the wedding date, everything has been planned, everybody expects this, and people, especially women, will say to themselves, oh, I'm just being silly. And because they don't want the embarrassment of beginning to really think what would happen if they think deeply and investigate what their intuition is telling them, because they made all these plans. So they will engage in that kind of level of denial as well. And sometimes it comes from the fact that they've been told that they're just being silly in general, that they're not very wise. And unfortunately, that's a trip that's been put on women for a long time. And so they deny this gift that they have because they don't want to appear to be silly. So those are four things I can think of off the top of my head that are reasons why
I think maybe also the fact, I think, now you may not agree with this, but I think in many of the cases, women who just ignore their intuition are broken women to start with. You know, they don't feel fulfilled and whole.
Sure.
And they've either coming from broken families where there's been abuse or emotional abuse, lack of self-esteem. So they question themselves because, you know, they've been told
this
they're stupid or you can't make good decisions, right?
Right. This is what's behind what I referred to as just being told that they were silly and believing it. That's really an abusive kind of thing to say to somebody, and it gets added to other abuse that they may have been through that indeed causes them to be broken women. Yeah, I would agree.
I think a lot of women who are part of our network, when we're honest about it, we come from homes where there was emotional abuse, drug and alcohol problems, a lack of connection with parenting, with our families. In some situations, the women were really, you know, badly physically abused. You know, they were looking to be loved, and somebody was being kind to them for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't think they really deserved anything much better because they've been given these messages, you're stupid, you're lazy, you're this, you're that. You know, their self-esteem was never really built up to start with. So some guy comes along and gives them a line, you know, and he's nice to them. And even if there are red flags, you feel like you're going from a frying pan into a strainer instead of a bigger frying pan. You know, you're jumping backwards that, you know, and maybe it's not perfect, but it's better than what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Or
right.
Maybe it's not perfect, but you know what? I don't really deserve much more. So yeah. I see this happening, and it just makes me so sad because there are so many guys out there who are predators, and I'm not talking about straight gay marriages now. I'm just talking about men and women in general.
Yes.
And yet there are wonderful, nice guys out there, and they seem to find themselves attracted to the same kind of narcissistic, broken women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they have to fix them also. You know,
yeah.
So it's a really strange phenomenon. You know, I learned many, many years ago when I was studying, you know, in counseling at my master's program, I had a teacher, and she said to me, in life there are two kinds of people. There are takers and givers. And she said they really desperately need each other because givers have nobody to give to if they don't have a taker, and takers have nobody to take from if they can't find a giver. But it's really important to find that balance, you know, so that you're not constantly giving or constantly taking, right?
That's right. That's right. We have the capacity to both give and to receive. I think the healthy relationship is where two people who can both give and receive are connected up with each other. If it's just a taker and a giver, frankly, the giver is always going to feel taken advantage of, shortchanged. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Even if you like giving, there comes a point where you want something back. And I see that in women all the time. I mean, and I'm not even talking about, once again, our straight gay marriages, because I think broken women find themselves in broken situations, and maybe it's a gay husband today, but if you don't get yourself fixed up, it's going to be, you know, somebody bad tomorrow. You know, it's going to be a predator who's looking to take advantage of you. And I always tell women, you have to go get fixed, meaning mentally and emotionally, and get the therapy you need to see why you allow yourself to be in these situations to start with.
Yeah.
But I know there's no easy answer, but if you don't get yourself fixed, then eventually you're never going to find the road to happiness. But I did want to ask you also, while we're on this topic, that in relationships in general, and once again, not going to the straight gay thing, but just in relationships with people, when you have family members who are, you know, a lot of our women come from families where there's toxicity, for lack of a better word, where there can be emotional abuse. You can have parents who are narcissists or sociopaths. Like, I came from a father who was truly, you know, I believe classified as a sociopath. He lacks a conscience. He lacks empathy. And that doesn't mean he can't be a nice guy when he wants to be, because I don't believe that any abuser abuses all the time. He can be very charming and funny. But there's a sickness within him that he came from a bad family, and I always try to make excuses for him, but there comes a time when you can't make them. And he played a really toxic role in my life, and even though it's so hard with a parent to say, I can't do this anymore, do you feel that sometimes you have to do that to survive? Is that okay? Because I cut my father off, you know, 20 years ago, because he was just bringing me down my whole life, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And
well,
told him
no one, is obligated to stay in an abusive relationship, no matter who it is. And so, yes, there comes a time when it's perfectly fine and really the necessary thing to do for one's own survival to say to somebody, I'm sorry, I can no longer stay in any kind of relationship with you. I'm done. Please do not contact me. And as hard as that sounds, sometimes that's necessary. There are gradations in between from I can do this much for you but no more. And sometimes people choose to do that, and sometimes that can work for them. But nobody's obligated to stay in any kind of ongoing abusive relationship. And just as an aside, you know, you said these folks can be charming and nice when they want to, but the reason for doing that, of course, for them is a certain way to do that. So always have, you know, when we're dealing with people who are that twisted, we always have to remember, even on their very best day, that they have their own interests, best interests at heart. And we need to take care of ourselves and not be taken in by them. The problem is that healthy folk, otherwise healthy people, don't think like narcissistic people do. So they keep hoping that they're going to change, but they don't. And that's hardly even comprehensible to the average, you know, person who is fairly healthy. They have a hard time believing anybody who can be that consistently sort of self-absorbed. But that is the definition of a narcissistic person. And the great sadness is that that person, that narcissistic person, is in and of him or herself quite broken. Because they can never be vulnerable, they can never be honest with themselves because they're just too fragile as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, a couple of really good points. I know that when it comes to parents or sisters or brothers, sometimes it's really hard because you've socialized from the time you're young. You know, you have to have respect for your parents, you have to love your parents, and especially when you come from religious communities where that's, you know, the number one rule, you know, honor your parents, love your parents. And some parents are just not very honorable or lovable, and I know that's a really hard break. I think a lot of times it's harder to break away from that relationship than it is from a bad marriage. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I think it is because, you know, we have come from our parents, and for those who have not been blessed with folks who are healthy parents, they've got two obstacles to overcome. One, they may not have learned how to be very good parents to themselves because the job of a parent is to two things. One is boundaries and the other is motivation. And to do that consistently and lovingly so that eventually the child is able to set their own boundaries and be their own motivator. But if it hasn't been healthy parenting, oftentimes what happens is that the child, even who then becomes an adult child, lives with these internalized messages of, you know, as you said earlier, you're no good, you'll never make it, you're a failure, you're a disappointment, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's harder to break away from an unhealthy parent, I think, than it is an unhealthy spouse. But let me just say something for the religious folks who are listening, both Christian and Jewish. In the Hebrew scripture, where it says, honor your father and mother, the word in Hebrew really could easily be translated as count as heavy or weigh heavy the contribution of your parents, meaning take it under significant advisement, but it doesn't mean slavish obedience. So it's not a commandment against being a thoughtful, intelligent, well-informed person. But it really comes from the concept of the people who were fat in the villages were the folks who were rich and could afford to be able to get fat, right? And so when it's count as heavy your parents, that would be a more literal translation. It means treat them with the same respect you would the wealthy folk around town. Give them the same dignity. But even with that idea that you would treat your parents as if they were royalty, so to speak, doesn't mean you have to slavishly obey them.
Right, and if it's a toxic relationship, you have every right to break it,
exactly.
Without feeling guilty, right?
That's right. That doesn't mean there won't be the experience of ennui, you know, kind of a vague uneasiness or a disappointment or sadness or grief. Of course,
it's like mourning any other relationship where there's a death in it.
That's right. And when the person's still living, it's mourning a relationship that might have been that never was.
I know, it's sad, but I think that, once again, for full recovery, you have to really weigh and measure what is bringing you down in life and who is bringing you down and how to change
exactly.
it. And as you're saying, that, you know, it's good if you can create some kind of boundaries. But that's not always possible, especially people who are narcissistic, you know, because they don't understand boundaries. They always know how to overstep the boundaries. So sometimes you have to make those cuts, right?
Yeah, and there's some practical ways to do that. When the phone rings, you don't have to answer it right away. You can listen to the voicemail. You can turn the ringer off when you go to bed at night so that you're not awakened at 2 and 3 and 4 by the person who continues to call over and over again. You can put a breath between their request and your response. Take a breath. Decide what you want to do. Don't respond in a reactionary kind of way. Give yourself some room to make healthy, informed decisions. You know, it can be as easy as, I'll have to check my calendar and get back to you. Yeah, so that you have ways to set boundaries.
Not easy, but it takes practice, and you can do it.
Yeah, the more you practice it, the easier it is to do that.
But I just really wasn't good at it, so I just said goodbye. I sent my father a divorce paper. I said, you are no longer my father. You know, he just had gone over every possible boundary you can ever imagine. And had no, he would say he was sorry, but he kept doing the same thing over and over. So that doesn't show me you're being sorry or trying to do something different.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to the point as an adult, you have to protect yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have a very, very sweet relative whose father was totally narcissistic and emotionally extremely abusive. And she's having now to not deal with him because he's no longer alive, but deal with the ghost of who he, you know, who he was that continues to be in her head. And people rehearse this stuff over and over and over again, trying to make sense of it. And the reality is, there is no making sense of it. Okay, there is no explaining it away. We just have to name what it is, recognize what happened, recognize we didn't deserve it, and then begin to take steps, because you can't change what happened, but take steps to take care of yourself as you move forward.
Well, talking about things that don't make a lot of sense, and moving on, Brian, you sent me this very interesting article, and it's called The Scientific Quest to Prove Bisexuality Exists. This is in the New York Times from back in March.
Yeah,
and
just this
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, I lost you a little bit on your phone. But that's okay. You know, I think it was very interesting because bisexuality, you know, something that's always standing in the middle of my conversations, no matter who I'm talking to. That word kind of just, like, creeps in there. And, you know, I read this article, and it's about, you know, people who are trying to come up with some theory here on bisexuality, you know, because they're made to feel as if, you know, bisexuality doesn't exist and that they really want, you know, one or the other, that it's kind of black and white, like I always say. And what were your thoughts about this?
Well, you know, I try to be as objective, Bonnie, as I possibly can. I read the latest, I try to read the latest in research that comes up. I'm always, and I have to say, I have not been able to find yet, not that they don't exist, I just haven't had the time to go to the university library and pull the journals in which these studies appeared, you know, particularly the 2011 study called Sexual Arousal Patterns of Bisexual Men Revisited. So I don't know all of the ingredients of the study. It does, from what I can see here in this telling of the research, there seems to be some substantial indicators that there, for some there are some truly bisexual men that are out there.
Can you explain to me what that means?
Well, they are both erotically and emotionally attracted to both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, let's just say for a moment that that's really the case, that the study is not flawed in any way, that we could replicate the study over and over with the same results, okay,
mm-hmm.
that the population is appropriate population to study to indicate this. Let's just presume that all of that's in place. What for the purpose of your listeners, the question then comes down to, I keep coming back to this again and again,
mm-hmm.
what do you want to deal with in your life? Were you told going into your marriage, I'm bisexual, by your husband? Was that shared with you? Do you want to have to deal with that? I think that's a very important kind of question to wrestle with for women who find themselves with men who say they're bisexual and they're having relationships with men, okay?
So here's a question I have to ask you. I mean, let's say I buy into the theory that there are men who are erotically, you know, disposed towards both men and women. So let's say that is the case. I'm just saying theoretically, let's say it's true.
Sure. Okay.
Now, if that is truly the case and a man falls in love with a woman,
mm-hmm.
why would he have to act on his need to be with a man? Can't he, if he's bisexual and all things are equal in an equal world, and he loves his wife, so he says, and that he loves making love to her, why isn't that good enough?
Because I don't see that happening. Mm-hmm.
I see men who are supposedly bisexual out there wanting men, and out there acting on it, and yet claiming they're bisexual, and that they love their wives. But I'm even saying that if I give them the benefit of the doubt that they're really making love to their wives and they enjoy it, I mean, maybe there are men like that. If
mm-hmm.
it's satisfying to them and the person satisfies them, why do they find this need to have to go with men?
Well, I keep coming back to something similar to that, and that is that what's the difference between a straight man who says, well, there's lots of other attractive women in this world, but I have an option. I can either be faithful to the woman I'm with, or I cannot be faithful. So I'm saying that if a man is truly bisexual and he makes a commitment to one person and it's exclusive, then that
mm-hmm.
excludes all of the relationships, both male and female.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying that
they're not fulfilled because they're bisexual and there's part of them that feels unfulfilled because being bisexual gives them a free pass card, which,
and,
you know, I think this is what a lot of bisexual people are trying to say.
If that's the case, then maybe they shouldn't have gotten into a heterosexual marriage in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not that bisexuality actually exists, and I'm willing because of, you know, the research is pointing towards there may be some subset of men who have sex with men who are truly bisexual. I'm willing to accept that possibility exists for them,
mm-hmm.
you know. I don't want to tell people what their experience is and isn't. I want to hear it from them, but I want them
mm-hmm.
to be honest with me about that experience. Not say things in such a way that it's socially more acceptable, and they need to be honest. But what I would say is that if you're not ready to make a commitment to one person, you ought not to have gotten married in the first place. Figure out where you're going to be happy and go there. And if you don't believe in monogamy in marriage, then don't get monogamously married to somebody. And to the women who find themselves with men who say, I really am bisexual, I really do enjoy having sex with you, and I love you deeply, but I'm unfulfilled, I don't know that that's a whole lot different than a man who says to a woman, there's just too much of my goodness to keep, to share with just one woman. I have to share it with many women, you know. I don't think the woman is obligated.
I think there is a difference there, Brian.
Like
I really
that.
Do. No, I think there is a difference. I think that with a man who's straight, you know, a straight sexual relationship should satisfy him. It's not like he says, well, this isn't satisfying enough because half of me wants a man. So I do find there is a difference there. But I'll tell you what my main concern is with the whole issue of bisexuality. And once again, I'm not going to acknowledge that it can happen. Maybe it does happen. But I think it's giving women false hope. You know, when they say a husband is bisexual, that means right away they have to start planning to, you know, be the best woman in the world to keep their husbands from feeling that need to be with a man. And this is what happens with our women. You know, their husbands aren't being honest about it. And bisexual to me, I have some women whose husbands still have sexual relationships with them, but I have gay men who come to me, Brian, and they say, I did whatever I had to do to sexually satisfy her so she wouldn't think that I'm gay. But, you know, they are gay. So gay men can sometimes, not all of them, but in some cases, have sexual experiences with women and, you know, have an orgasm or even pretend they enjoy it, but it's not what they're really looking for. And I think we're giving women false hope with that word. That's what I don't like about it, because I think people look at bisexuality, the word means choice. And that's where I think it gets distorted, that I have a choice. And if you're a good enough wife, I'm going to choose you. But if you're not a good enough wife, don't be surprised if I need to go out and do my thing.
Well, what's the difference between that and a man who says, there's just too much of this hunk of man here to be given just to one woman. I need to be with other women, and you need to understand that.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, maybe they have men like that. I just haven't run across them who are telling their wives that particular story. But I mean,
we know there are a lot of straight men that cheat on their wives with other women. Why are they out doing that?
Yeah, well, then they have to get out of those marriages, too. I mean, those women,
want
to stay in there.
But you point out a good point, and that is, I personally, there are a lot of men I have dealt with who said that they basically were kidding themselves for years, telling themselves that they were bisexual, when in reality they were gay, because that was how they could justify trying to stay in a marriage, and they got the best of both worlds in their minds. Okay, so part of the problem is people's self-perception. In other words, the men's self-perception. What is it? What are they really experiencing versus how they're naming what they're experiencing? Because like you said, there are gay men, I've worked with plenty of them, who have children because they were married at one point in time. They cared for their wives. They were sexual with their wives. But in reality, when they were honest with themselves, they really weren't feeling emotionally and sexually fulfilled the way they were with men. Are those men bisexual? According to my definition, no. But that's part of the problem, is how does one define their terms? So that's one of the things that has to have great clarity to it. What do we mean by
that? Like you say, regardless of what you want to call it, what it is, did you sign up for this?
Thank you.
And the fact that you know that your husband is never going to be satisfied with just you, that he's always going to be out there looking at men, wanting a man, and eventually going with a man, you know, that's something that I think is a lot for a woman to have to contend with. And I always tell them, you know, it's your choice, but is this what you want to live with?
Right. And I agree with you about the false hope issue. I completely agree with you. And that's why, you know, a number of women, instead of saying, this is unacceptable to me when they find out their husband has been with another man, this is unacceptable, period, they begin to ask, well, can I make this work because he says he's bi? Well, that's an awful big project to get into, and you didn't sign up for that in the first place. Do you really want to do that?
Now, so, I have somebody who just sent a letter for you to answer this question. Okay, so this is from Denise, and she's in the South. I won't, you know, tell you where she is. Mm-hmm. She asked me not to say it. Okay, she said, could you ask Dr. Hooper this question? Does the kind of sex matter, whether it's oral or anal? My husband says that he likes to have oral sex with a man, but he would never do anything else.
Well, if he likes to have sex with a man, no matter what kind of sex it is, he likes to have sex with men. You know?
Well, some women are told by men, by their husbands, I guess it's, you know, came up because it does come up with, you know, women in our group. The husbands will say, well, I'm not gay. I don't do that kind of stuff. I don't have sex with a man, with anal sex. So if I like some guy just to, you know, play with me or give me, you know, oral mm-hmm. sex, that doesn't make me gay.
Didn't we go through
that? Have you ever
that
heard that before?
Didn't we go through some version, some heterosexual version of that back in the Clinton White House days? Didn't we go rehearse that already?
Yeah, I think Monica Lewinsky tried to use that one, right?
Sex is sex,
really,
no matter what kind of sex it is. If it's erotic and it's intimate, there you go. It doesn't matter.
It's still sex, right?
Yes.
All right, so I know the next question that somebody's going to come up with, I didn't get it yet tonight. If that's still sex, and this is a big question, Brian, what about husbands who are looking at gay porn but not acting on it?
I mean, in other words, they say they're looking at gay porn, but they're not out there, they're in the community.
Well, you catch them looking at gay porn, and they say that, it's just a fantasy. I would never do anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe once out of curiosity, but that would be
right. It.
That would be it. If they're going back to do
they are going back. They're constantly looking at gay porn
and
claiming that they're not acting on it.
Then, you know, there's your answer right there. And the reality is, Bonnie, when they say this kind of nonsense, it may well be the case that they're not just simple liars, but they're deceiving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if every man who says that has come to grips with the fact that he's gay and he's okay with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They may well
Absolutely.
Be kidding themselves as well as the wife. And unfortunately, it's oftentimes the wives who have to say, let's call it for what it is, let's be real about it, and let's deal with it straight up and move on.
Well, I know that I have one of our wonderful members that, you know, you also know that she's dealing with this all the time. You know, she just was not comfortable with the fact that her husband was constantly viewing gay porn, gay sites, you know, looking on the internet for gay dating sites, and claiming that, you know, this is just some kind of fantasy, he would never act on it, and denying that there's any truth to him being gay. And, I mean, she's just one of so many women I get with this particular situation where the husbands get caught with the gay porno and they say, big deal. Every man has their fantasies, and fantasies are normal things for people to have. It doesn't mean you act on them. But I just don't feel like straight men are having gay fantasies. I mean, in my experience.
I don't think they are. I don't think they're oriented that way. No. Neither are gay men having straight fantasies about women.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right, Bri.
They might look once out of curiosity, but they're not. Gay men are not going back on straight porno sites watching women to do more research.
That's what I'm saying. The whole thing, you know, once again, is just so distorted.
You know,
I mean, I know how hard it is for...
Bonnie, let me give everybody a tip.
Okay, go ahead.
Whenever anything is stated one way, state it the mirror opposite. Let me give you an example. Here's one. I've encountered a lot. Brian, when did you decide that you were going to become gay?
Mm-hmm.
I won't answer the question. What I will say is, when did you decide that you were going to become straight?
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden they realize the kind of question they're posing. So when something is said that doesn't make sense, turn it around and see if you can get at what's going on by turning the question around, whatever the question is. That's kind of a general principle I carry around through life. And I put it to political issues and all sorts of issues. Hold the mirror up to it. Look at the reverse of it and see if it makes any sense. Usually we see that there's some false supposition in there someplace.
Mm-hmm. It's like I had a woman write to me. She's part of our support network today. And she said, can you point me to one of your newsletters or radio shows that addresses helping family members understand that gay is not a choice? I had a phone conversation with, you know, my ex-husband's sister. She does not understand why he can't choose to remain celibate and live as he has for the last 50 years. I asked her, when did she choose to be a heterosexual? That did throw her, and I hope she will think on it. Thanks for any help you can give me, and I sent her a link to one of your shows. But, you know, people just don't get this concept. And I think that, you know, like when I was on, I think I mentioned maybe to you on the last time on this show, that was very, you know, oriented towards the Baptist Black Church. And people are very lovely, but they were saying to me, well, God doesn't make mistakes. You know, when I was trying to explain that homosexuality is not a choice and that people don't choose it. And they're arguing with me, yes, they do choose it. And I said, well, that's ridiculous, you know. Why would somebody choose to be gay if they could choose to be straight? Why would they want to be part of a group of people who are persecuted, spit on, made to feel as if they, you know, should be shot, who are beat up and killed over it? And they said, well, you know, they have a choice because God doesn't make mistakes. And they really believed it, Brian. I mean, I can't believe people are telling me this in 2014. God doesn't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where do you start changing thinking like that?
And,
where do you begin?
And that they believe it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often said people who reach conclusions apart from logical means can rarely be persuaded by logical means to believe otherwise. So what usually changes people is, let me sit down with you and you tell me your story and I'll tell you my story and we'll find the common human experience in both of our stories. And that tends to lead people to greater truth rather than trying to quote one scripture passage against another.
No, the scriptures are murder.
That rarely.
And I mean that for any fundamentalist. I don't mean just for Christians because I'm from a Jewish background and guess what? It's just as bad. You know, as far as fundamentalist or religious Orthodox Jews, totally unacceptable. They cannot, you know, accept the fact that homosexuality is part of anything. And it's, you know, totally illegal and you're outlawed. And, you know, it's the same thing with Muslims. I mean, it doesn't matter what religion it is when there's fundamentalism and people misinterpreting it. And that's another thing that really bothers me because, you know, the whole point about God should be about love, not about punishment and humiliation you know, this is not what God was supposed to be about. And I can't imagine anyone from any religion thinking that this is how God would act, you know, to punish somebody because they're gay. Or that somebody, God's going to invent somebody gay, now they have to live as a celibate for 50 or 60 years because it's a test. Like people say to me, well, it's a test. How come they can't pass the test?
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe people are still saying this today?
I know people are still saying this sort of thing today, and lots of other nonsense that results in disruptions and wars and hatred and bigotry and violence and the very thing that is contrary to the message of the Christian gospel and the Jewish message of covenant and the message of the God of peace of Islam, you know. I mean, it's... But,
right, and that's why I say I understand all this, and I think sometimes people feel the word bisexual, you know, sounds better to people. You know, that it's something that's more trendy, that, you know, you don't have to say the word gay. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, I mentioned this before about Jews who had a, you know, were converting to Christianity. You know, there's a massive movement for this back in the 1980s or 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called, you know, for a long time when Christians were trying to convert Jews, it was really difficult because giving up your Judaism, like, is a big deal. And especially when people came from religious Jewish families, the families would just say, goodbye, you're not part of the family, you're dead to us.
Right.
So they didn't want to have to give up who they were to believe in Jesus. So somebody got really smart with the marketing, and they came up with something called a Messianic Jew. So it didn't have that word Christian in it, and they wore yarmulkes, and they sang Jewish prayers. They said the name Jesus, you know, in Hebrew, Yeshua, so it didn't sound that much like Jesus, so that people were able to feel they were still part of a Jewish community, you know, mentally, even though, to me, once you cross that dividing line, once you, you know, once Jesus, you know, becomes your God, then you are a Christian, and that's fine. You know, people want to make that choice. You know, I'm certainly not against that, but don't delude yourself into thinking that you're still Jewish once you believe in Jesus. You know, it's just making you feel better about something that's not the case. You are a Christian. Embrace it. You wanted to believe in this. That's fine. And to me, it's like, kind of like bisexuality. It's the same thing. It's like I always say, the penis is the dividing line. And once you cross over it, whether you're thinking about it, wanting to touch it, feel it, interact with it, once you cross over that line, that is a gay thing. It doesn't matter to me whether you're still having sex with a woman. You're also having gay sex. So if you feel better calling yourselves bisexual, because in 98% of these cases, I believe this to be true from everything I've learned over 30 years, men will stay in their marriages to say, I am bisexual, I have a wife. It doesn't matter that they're not really sleeping with their wives or having sex with their wives and that the only sex they're having is with men. But they can really identify with the fact that they don't have to say that word gay because of some feeling of shame, or they don't want to have to, you know, admit this to the family. Bisexuality still has that, you know, kind of sexy kind of connotation. You know, so it still sounds better to most people, I think, than gay sounds. So a lot of men are able to not take that final step into admitting to themselves that they're gay, if they can use that word bisexual. So, you know, those are my thoughts on it. I'm not saying maybe there aren't some men who are, you know, but once again, then it comes down to the monogamy situation. You know, and you're saying, well, how about a straight man who wants to have sex with a lot of women because he just has great sexual urges? Maybe he's a sex addict. That's possible, too. You know, sex addicts can never feel fulfilled. But the point is that with a gay man who's calling himself bisexual, he's going to tell you that the reason why he can't be happy with you, his straight wife, is because that part of him will never be fulfilled with just her. You know, I haven't met the bi man yet who said to me, you know what, I have a thing for men, I have a thing for women, but you know what, it's bisexual, I can make a choice, and that choice is going to be my happy choice for the rest of my life. Now, I haven't met that, but that's me. Have you?
Well, I've met a couple, and I don't, you know, I don't want to go into any details right now.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
was protect
okay.
confidences, but I'm
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking off the top of my head of one gentleman in particular who, faithful to his wife, happy with her. Has not strayed, and says he's been attracted to men, but he really enjoys sex with his wife,
mm-hmm.
And feels emotionally very close to her, and doesn't need to step out on her, but yet knows that he could, and he would enjoy it if he chose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but again, I come back to, okay, so there are men who may be truly bisexual. There are men who, we know this for sure, that say they're bisexual, but in reality, they're gay men who happen to be in relationships with women, and it does sound better to them, and they can cope with it in their own heads. They think better by calling themselves bisexual. But for the purpose of your listeners, again, I come back to what I, you know, I sound like an old harp or something. What do you want? Do you want to deal with a man who says that he's bisexual, whether he's a gay man who says that or he's truly bisexual? Do you want to have to deal with that and all its complications or not? And I think the folks, the women that end up encountering your wonderful writings, Bonnie, and calling on the show, these are women who have been disillusioned. They thought they were marrying a man who only wanted to be with them, period. And that's
mm-hmm.
what they committed to. And again, I would say, and they don't have to put up with all of these complications. As you have said so often before, life should not be this complicated. You didn't sign up for this kind of complications. You signed up for better or for worse, you know, for sickness and health, but not for straight or gay or bi. You only signed up for straight, right?
Exactly.
And so when all of a sudden it's gay or it's bi that gets introduced, that's probably not a tenable option. And you're not.
I think it's really hard to compete with that. You know, that's my issue, that if I knew that my husband was bisexual, this is me, and I think I do reflect the voice of the majority of us, maybe not all of us, but every time he would walk out that door and he'd be home 10 minutes late, I'd have to be wondering.
When is
the shoe going to drop? Am I right?
It's the exact same thing that women who have had straight husbands who have cheated on them keep asking, you know? Is it going to be me alone, or am I going to have somebody else to deal with?
I'm not sure that's the same, Brian. I'm going to tell you why. I don't think that infidelity is necessarily the same as sexuality. I think that marriages go through trials and tribulations. Somebody could cheat on you. You know, a moment of weakness will happen, but I think a marriage can be put back on track. Certainly not mine, but, you know, other people's who have stronger egos than I have. But I think with sexuality is so much different because of the feeling of failure you have as a woman to be able to satisfy your husband.
Well, it won't
matter how much you try to satisfy him, unlike the other straight woman whose husband may have strayed. You know, they can get back on track. With this, I don't think
right.
you can get back on track.
You can't. Since, you know, graphically speaking, you can't provide both a vagina and a penis. You can only
right.
provide one. And you can only provide the emotional makeup of a woman, not the emotional makeup of a man. So, yeah, I agree with the point you're making. Uh-huh.
I do agree, though, that I think infidelity of any kind, I mean, I couldn't deal with it. I've tried in the past, you know, I guess in other relationships. I mean, some women are good at it. I'm just not. To me, it's the most important part of a relationship, having that loyalty. And the thought of, you know, my boyfriend, it's, you know, 20 years that we're together. But the thought of him being with somebody else, I think, would wound me so deeply. Because when you love and you trust someone so much, and you build your lives together around each other, and then for whatever the reason is, you know, I wouldn't care if I was sick, unavailable, or whatever. The need to go outside that relationship, to me, I just could never heal from it.
Yeah.
But some women do. And I, you know, I just don't say there's a right or a wrong. I just think it is who you are as a person. But I couldn't. I mean, could you?
It would be very difficult for me.
Yeah, me too. Very. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
My ego is just not that strong. So,
yeah.
Brian, you've brought up some wonderful issues. I can't believe our hour is already over.
Already, yep. Yep.
And, you know, I just want to remind people that if you need therapy, if you need someone who can make you feel better, you know, a lot of women say to me, well, who can I send my husband to, you know, to try to get clarity on his issue? And even if you need the therapy to get clarity on the issue, you know, Brian Hooper is your man. And I know that people say, but I'm so far away from him. He's in Tennessee, near Nashville. And I say, it doesn't really matter, because now you can do phone counseling, Skype counseling, you know, mail counseling. There's so many different ways to get to Brian. And you know that he's a true advocate for all of us, also to try to get things on track. You know, I always tell women, marriage counseling won't help, but a lot of times divorce counseling helps. Teaching people how to put their lives back on track if the marriage has to end so that you can end under the best of circumstances, especially when there's children, instead of the worst circumstances. And Brian would be really excellent at helping both of you, not just, you know, singly, but together, if you want to do something that will make it better for the whole family unit, right, Brian?
Absolutely. I'm very pleased and honored to be able to help out any way I can.
So to find Brian, of course, you can go to my gayhusbands.com website, the way you find me. And on the right-hand side where you have resources, you'll see Dr. Brian Hooper's link there. Because sometimes people just can't remember to go to drbrianhooper.com, Dr. Brian Hooper. But if you can't remember that, you can just go right to my website, or you could write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll hook you right up so you can get to Brian. So, Brian, I want to thank you so much for being part of our network and always making everybody, including me, feel better. See, I was not even feeling good when I started the show. I'm feeling really good now.
Well,
you have that effect
better
on me.
Thank you.
I think my
thank
mental
you,
health has really impacted my physical health, and you always do that for me. You always make me feel calmer and better and hopeful, and you know I love you.
I love you too, Bonnie. Thank you so much.
All right, and I'll be talking to you at the end of next month. And everybody,
right,
have a wonderful week, and good night and love to all of you. Bye-bye.